Welcome to today's deep dive for you, our favorite learner. Today, we are looking at South Africa's Social Housing Regulations booklet, along with the updated government gazettes.
Yeah, and our mission today is really to unpack this fascinating balancing act that's required to actually build and run social housing over there.
Right, because if you've ever wondered how affordable housing systems survive without just, you know, going bankrupt, this is exactly what we're getting into.
Because good intentions just aren't enough. Getting accredited to run these projects is honestly closer to applying for a top secret security clearance.
Oh, absolutely. The scrutiny is intense. I mean, why is this clearance so wild? Because before a single brick is even laid, these institutions have to prove they are legally and ethically bulletproof.
Exactly. It starts with the structure itself. They must be a very specific legal entity, like a nonprofit company, a municipal entity, or a housing co-op.
Which means no private tycoons secretly skimming off the top. They need these rigorous anti-fraud systems, dispute resolution protocols. And this blew my mind. They even need plans for managing coordinated rent boycotts.
Wait, rent boycotts? So they have to anticipate massive strikes right out of the gate.
Yeah, they have to have documented step-by-step plans for it because the margins are just incredibly thin.
Right. A single organized strike could literally collapse an entire project if they aren't prepared for the absolute worst-case scenarios.
And here's the craziest part. Zero profits can be distributed to members. Like, every single cent has to be reinvested into the housing.
Even if the institution goes under and completely dissolves, it can't just liquidate and pocket the cash.
Nope. The assets have to be legally transferred to another accredited social housing institution. The wealth just stays permanently locked inside the public system.
Well, that makes sense to protect the public's investment.
It does, but wait. So they have to operate with the financial ruthlessness of a massive corporation, but they aren't allowed to keep a single dime of the profit.
Pretty much. I mean, it's really the only way to safeguard that money over the long term. But once they prove they're ethically sound, they have to solve this seemingly impossible math problem.
The rent cap, right. The law says rent cannot exceed 33.3% of a household's income.
Exactly. But that capped rent still has to perfectly cover operating costs, you know, like maintenance, security, utilities, and debt.
Which just sounds mathematically impossible. How does capping your revenue at a third of low-income salaries not immediately bankrupt the building?
It forces this brutal financial balancing act. To make it work, the government recently updated the target income bands to reflect, well, actual economic reality.
Right, I saw that. They adjusted the subprimary market limit to households earning between 1,500 and 1,850 Rand a month.
Yeah, and on the upper end, they bumped the secondary market limit up to 22,000 Rand.
Which wasn't just pulled out of thin air, right?
No, not at all. That specifically aligns with FISP, which is the Finance-Linked Individual Subsidy Program.
Ah, okay, so tenants who eventually earn too much to qualify for social housing can kind of seamlessly transition into government-subsidized homeownership.
You got it. It basically builds a ladder out of the system.
That is brilliant. But even with those adjusted bands, developers still need to actually build these places.
Right.
So if you can't rely on massive profit buffers to save you from mistakes, how do you even convince a private developer to sign on?
Well, you enforce strict financial guardrails. Projects have to demonstrate a really strict internal rate of return, or IRR. It's capped at the prime overdraft rate plus 4.5%.
Meaning the project generates just enough yield to survive inflation and, you know, service its debt, but it is mathematically blocked from generating the kind of excess profit that would drive up rents.
Exactly. Plus, private firms have to contribute a minimum of 20% of their own equity just to be eligible. They have to have real skin in the game.
It's like being forced to cook a 5-star meal on a fast food budget, all while guaranteeing a very specific profit margin to the bank.
That is a perfect analogy. And the oversight doesn't even stop once the building is occupied. They face mandatory comprehensive property inspections every 3 years.
Ah, every 3 years.
Yep, along with relentless financial and tenancy audits.
So why does this crazy regulatory web matter to you, the listener? Because it proves that solving a housing crisis isn't simply about constructing buildings.
Right. It's about engineering these permanent, self-sustaining, hyper-monitored ecosystems that can actually survive.
Which leads to a really fascinating thought for you to ponder today.
Yeah. Imagine taking these incredibly strict governance, maintenance, and rent tapping regulations and just applying them to the standard private rental market.
Oh, wow.
Right? How would that fundamentally change the behavior of your everyday landlord?